We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Nicole Byer, helping you make those rooms flyer. Today's style tip, when it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild! Like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Ooh, fierce! This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
5 seconds before 10 o'clock.
Destination Freedom. Listen, it's the Freedom Bell.
Aye, the Freedom Bell, my friends. And this is Paul Revere, called back from the shadows by the sound of the Freedom Bell to cry again a warning that the price of freedom is eternal vigilance.
Destination Freedom is presented by Station WMAQ in the interest of human freedom the world over. Paul Revere is the symbol of warning, ready to ride down the skies to shout an alarm. His destination, now and forever, freedom.
Suppose a man wants a place to live, a house to shelter his family. Well, he takes wood, brick, and shingles, or other materials, and puts them together in a certain shape, according to his own civilization, his own heritage. Now, this may mean the house will be a camel skin tent in the Sahara, a brush-covered platform along the Congo, or perhaps a sod hut overlooking the Grand Canyon. In a more complex civilization such as ours, it may mean a towering structure honeycombed with dwelling units, a mansion of stone set amid flowering shrubs, or a small, neat frame building with a picket fence. These are the houses we know best in the United States. Now, who determines where the house is to set and what shape it is to take? Aye, it's the free choice of the owner. He can choose a plot of ground in the country or in a neighborhood among friends, and he can build into his house all the comforts and protections he wishes, according to his own desires and his ability to pay. Aye, in a democracy, any man has the right to live where he chooses. This is one of the freedoms won for the common man, his right under the Constitution of the United States, a part of his democratic heritage, a right which no man should take from another. Yet it is only true for some Americans. For among us there are groups of hard-working, intelligent, sincere people who cannot freely determine where and in what circumstances they shall live and attempt to build a home. Our story today is about a man from one of these groups, Thomas Wright, American citizen. And what about this Thomas Wright? Well, it's all there in the record, which is now about to be scrutinized by two men.
You know, I'm a little puzzled, Mr. Gibbs, that you, the chairman of the City Council for Human Rights, have called me to your office to show me this Thomas Wright report. I just don't get it.
Get what, Mr. Grayson?
Why, me? After all, I don't represent the neighborhood.
I realize that, but you live in the house next to Mr. Wright's, and according to the report, you're one of the strongest objectors to his living there.
Sure, I objected to his living there, but so do all the others on the block.
Yes, I know. But since you are the nearest neighbor, the council feels that if you can try to understand his side of the story, perhaps in turn you can help the others understand.
I can't see what more there is to understand. All I know is that I'm not going to have any Negro living next door to me, and that's that.
Mr. Grayson, do you consider yourself a good American citizen?
I certainly do. Say, just what are you getting at? If you're...
I mean, do you believe in the ideals of equality and freedom upon which this country was founded?
Sure I do.
Then you wouldn't knowingly join a group of communist agitators that was seeking to undermine our American principles.
Listen, I'll have you know that
Mr. Grayson, did you ever hear of the Supreme Banner Society?
Why, yes, I know them, but... That is... Well, let me explain, Mr. Gibbs.
Go ahead.
You see, I didn't know anything about this society, and I still don't know much. The first I ever heard of it was when, one evening a few weeks ago, a man I never had seen previously rang my doorbell. Yes?
You, Mr. Grayson?
I am.
I represent the Supreme Banner Society, Mr. Grayson. We understand some Negroes are moving in next door soon. Now, you look like the sort of a man who wouldn't like that.
I don't.
I knew it. A fine, intelligent-looking gentleman like you would hardly wish to be placed in such close proximity to Negroes.
You're absolutely right. It makes me boiling mad.
Of course, Mr. Grayson. I understand. Now, I presume you would be interested in seeing that these people don't succeed in their plot to get into this neighborhood.
I certainly would. But who are you?
My name's Clyde, Theodore Clyde. Our society has been formed just to prevent things like this happening to good American citizens like you, Mr. Grayson.
How do you mean?
Well, we're chartered in a number of states and have quite a large membership. All you have to do is to pay me a membership fee of $2, and we take care of everything.
You mean you use violence? That,
oh,
of course,
you misunderstand, Mr. Grayson. We merely make things a little uncomfortable for those undesirable races, which any good American should guard against, not violence.
Well, I don't know.
Think, Mr. Grayson, your children wouldn't be safe on the street. Your wife wouldn't even be safe in your own home with neighbors like those. Oh, surely it's worth $2 to you to protect your family.
Well, I guess you're right at that. All right, here's your $2. What's the money for, by the way?
The cost of printing up our little pamphlets. You see? Here, I'll leave one for you to read. And here is your membership card. I'll advise you where we will hold a meeting. Thank you, Mr. Grayson.
Yeah.
You're doing a very patriotic thing. Now, the house on the other side of you, I believe, is occupied by Mr. Thorndyke. I shall call on you.
That's how I came to know this society, but actually, I had little to do with them. I can explain more.
I'd like to have you tell me more of your experiences with them, Mr. Grayson. May help fill in this report. I can tell you some facts about this group, too, which I think you should know. But first, I'd like to have you know more about this Thomas Wright, the Negro who purchased the house next to you.
Well, certainly.
Here is the record. Read it, Mr. Grayson. Read it aloud, and we can go over it together.
Okay. Let's see. It says, Thomas Wright, desiring another place to live.
Yes, that's how it is in the record. In cold type, just Thomas Wright, desiring another place to live. But the record doesn't state why he wanted another place to live. A man has to have reasons. His elderly mother, who well knew his reasons, was worried. Wanted to talk with him about them.
Tom, son, sit here with me a while. I want to talk to you.
Sure, Mother.
I've been sitting here all day, just rocking and thinking, rocking and thinking.
And what about, Mother?
About you, son, and Opal.
What about us?
Oh, how it ain't fitting for young folks to keep waiting to get married.
Mother, you know why.
Yes, I know. Seems like if he had a mind to, the good Lord would have worked out something for you by now.
Mother.
Hear me out, boy. I know you and Opal been waiting to find a decent place to live, not like this. But it looks like there ain't going to be no such place. Not for a black boy and girl.
Well, we haven't given up yet. I have an appointment tomorrow to see a friend of mine who works for Hunter and Swain. You know, the colored real estate people. Perhaps he'll
He won't get you a nice home. No more than any of the others has. There's none to get.
Then we'll continue to wait. Surely at once...
If you waited long enough, Tom. Waited through the war years till you was out of the army. Waited when you get home so you could get a college education. Then waited some more till you were earning enough money. Now, since you earn enough money on that chemical job, you've been waiting for a good place to live.
That's true, but we...
Quit waiting, son. Sometimes a body can wait too long. Opal's a fine girl. A girl like that deserves a good husband and a family of her own.
Well, that's just it. I can't expect a girl like Opal to begin her married life in a place like this.
She ain't got nothing no better now.
I know she hasn't, but... Well, don't you see, that's why neither of us wants to marry and raise a family here in the ghetto. We know what it'll be like for our kids.
You and Opal, too, was raised here.
But our children needn't be.
Son, listen.
No, Mother, please listen to me. Do you think kids, any kids, regardless of the color of their skins, like to live huddled together in overcrowded rooms with not enough heat in the winter and too much heat in the summer with the stale, acrid odor of cooking, of their neighbors' garbage, of the dust from the alleys drawn into their bodies with every breath they take? Do they like the harsh sounds at night of too many people being crammed into one building, the scary noises of rats scampering across the floor? Do you think they like...
Son, don't you think I feel all this? My heart been crying deep down inside me all these years.
And why do you...
I'm just trying to say the world's against you because your skin ain't the color of the Lord's favorite. You're stuck here, boy. It ain't easy to get out of the ghetto. Quit waiting.
Maybe you're right. There's still one more chance, though. Perhaps tomorrow that real estate fellow will have something for us.
So, you see, Mr. Grayson, those were Tom's reasons for wanting another place to live. A decent place. You know, you can't put things like that in the cold type of a record. Any more than you can put the poor, tired, tattered heart of a man on a page and glue it there and say, "Now read that." But Tom went to see his friend in the real estate business the next day. He was feeling hopeful in spite of his mother's remark.
Sorry, Tom. We haven't a thing right now. You know as well as I do, there are more colored people living in the ghetto than we have room for. Over 300,000 in less than 5 square miles.
I know.
Unless you'd consider...
Yes?
There'll be a vacancy soon over at 488 Pearl Street. The building's in pretty bad condition, though. Hunter and Swain doesn't own it, you understand?
What's it like?
Pretty small, only one room. You see, the owner has split every room in the building into two very small ones by putting up clapboard partitions and calling them one-room kitchenettes. There are already four people in the other half. Rent is $42.50 per month.
$42.50 for one room?
Well, you know how it goes, Tom. Got to get what you can when you're in the real estate business these days.
I see. Well... Thanks for offering it, but I guess we'll wait a little longer.
Tom, I don't like to say this, but there's not much chance of your finding anything outside the ghetto. You know what the situation is. The white neighborhoods close to the ghetto where our people would logically move are all closed to us because of race-restrictive covenants. Even those where covenants can no longer be enforced by court action if they're violated, they're legal. And the neighborhood farther away where there are no covenants, well, there's certainly a very slim chance there.
Yes, Charlie, I know all this. Well, thanks a lot for trying.
So Tom waited some more. Just as many others like him were waiting for a chance. The one slim chance to live in a decent home amid healthy surroundings. Only Tom was one of the more fortunate ones. His chance came. Came quite unexpectedly without his seeking. An Irishman by the name of Alan Murphy, a co-worker in the chemical company, stopped by Tom's desk one day to tell him the news that was fast spreading through the office.
Tom, have you heard the news? About me, I mean.
Well, no, Alan, I haven't. Although I must say, you certainly look like the cat who just swallowed the canary.
Boy, am I getting a break. I'm being promoted. Swell job, too, with more money in the Detroit office. Leaving in 2 weeks.
Well, great. Glad to hear it. If anyone deserves a good break, you do, Alan. You've worked hard here.
Well, I don't know. So have all the other fellas. But wait till I tell my wife, will she be pleased? Of course, she'd probably start worrying right away about getting ready to leave on such short notice. They got to sell our house, too, you know. But she'll be happy about it.
Ah, well, congratulations, Alan.
Yeah, thanks, Tom. Say... See, didn't I hear something about you being on the receiving end of some congratulations yourself? Getting married, aren't you?
Oh, not for a while yet. Somebody must have it wrong. No, we... Well, that is, my girl and I are still looking for a place to live.
Ah, see, that's tough. I know how it is. Buy your own home, I always say. Then you don't have any rental problems.
Well, that's what I want to do. I've got the money saved, but... Well, see, in my case, it isn't so simple.
See, I have an idea. Why don't you buy my house? Then both the problems would be solved. Yeah. I've got to get back on the job now. The boss will think I'm not worth promoting. Tell you what, meet me downstairs after work and we'll talk about
Continue reading the record, please, Mr. Grayson.
It says, so on December 5th last, purchased a home located at 155 Dome Avenue from one Alan Murphy. His neighbors were to be George Grayson and James Thorndike.
But it doesn't say how Tom's fiancée, Opal, felt about this when he told her two nights later.
Oh, Tom, I'm burning with curiosity. What's this great news you have for me?
Well, it's wonderful news, honey. It means we can get married now. No more waiting.
Oh, Tom, you don't mean... You haven't found us a place to live.
Sure have, honey. A nice place, too. Plenty of air and sunshine, a good, clean building, everything we wanted.
Oh, Tom, I feel like crying.
Well, I like that. Aren't you happy about it?
Oh, of course, silly. Just like a man. Never heard of tears of happiness.
Well, no. Oh,
quick, now tell me. How did you get this house, and where is it located?
Well, I bought it from Alan Murphy. You know, that nice white guy at the office you've heard me mention.
Yes.
And it's located at 155 Dome Avenue. Oh, you'll love the house, honey. It's a...
Tom, did I understand you to say that you have already purchased this house on Dome Avenue?
We sure have. Closed the deal yesterday. It's all ours, lock, stock, and barrel.
Oh, Tom, I'm frightened. Do you realize what you've done? You bought us a home in an all-white neighborhood.
Yes, but it's our house, and no one can get it away from us now.
But Tom's arguments for happiness overrode Opal's fears. Like any couple the world over, they were soon so busy with their wedding plans and the arrangements for moving to their new home, they forgot that the right to live where one pleases was a nebulous one for them, not clearly etched on the minds of many Americans. The Alan Murphys over on Dome Avenue were busy, too, preparing to move their household belongings. It was about this time that the Supreme Banner Society stepped into the picture. Tell me, Mr. Grayson, did you hear from this Mr. Clyde again?
Yes, just a few days after he first contacted me, I received a phone call from him.
Mr. Grayson, this is Theodore Clyde.
Oh, yes.
I am happy to report that most of your neighbors in the block have joined our society.
Fine.
I'm calling to inform you that our group, we call this the Dome Avenue chapter, is holding a little meeting tomorrow night in the basement at 159.
Fellow members, if you please.
The purpose of this meeting is twofold. First, to give you an opportunity for an open expression of your feelings in the matter of this Negro couple moving into the neighborhood. Second, to be in unanimous agreement that some action be taken against not only these Negroes, but the white family as well, who has perpetrated this outrage. We must all stick together in our efforts to right this terrible wrong.
Well, the meeting lasted about 2 hours. Very carefully, very cleverly, Mr. Clyde drew us out. The leader of the most reticent among us had made heated remarks about Negroes, Jews, Mexicans, Italians. The whole purpose of the meeting became clouded. When we left, nothing had been decided. But I think we were all aroused to a smug, righteous anger.
When was this meeting, Mr. Grayson?
December 18th.
That would be the night before the Murphys were to move out of the house. Read the next part of the record, Mr. Grayson. I think it'll interest you.
On the morning of December 19th, the Yellow Transit Moving Company picked up the Murphys' furniture, and it was on its way to Detroit, or so Mrs. Murphy thought. She was packed and ready to leave for Detroit and just waiting for her husband.
Mrs. Murphy?
Yes?
We're from the Yellow Transit Moving Company. We're coming to return your furniture, ma'am.
Return? But you just moved it out. And we expect it to be in Detroit when we get there. Why are you bringing it back?
Orders from the boss.
Oh, must be some mistake.
No mistake, lady. We got our orders.
What do you mean? You were hired to move my furniture to Detroit.
Sorry, lady. Orders is orders. The boss says we ain't to move it.
I'm going to call your office.
Speaking.
Is this the Yellow Transit Moving Company?
Yes.
And are you the manager?
Yes.
This is Mrs. Murphy at 155 Dome Avenue. We made arrangements for your company to move our furniture, and now your movers tell me they have orders not to. They are putting the furniture back. I demand an explanation.
Sorry, Mrs. Murphy. There's been a clerical error in the office. We now find that we have a prior commitment today to move some other goods.
But we are leaving for Detroit tonight. It's imperative that the furniture be moved today.
You might try the Odell Van outfit over on West Texas Street. They take short notice orders.
The Odell Van Company. That's a small Negro company. I've seen the van. But it's hardly suitable for long-distance hauling.
I'm afraid there's nothing we can do for you, Mrs. Murphy. Sorry.
Now, do you begin to see how the Supreme Banner Society operates, Mr. Grayson?
Yes, but are you sure that...
Our counsel was told the whole story sometime later by Mr. Collins, manager of the Yellow Transit Moving Company.
You see, we couldn't afford to take the chance of moving the Murphys. We accepted their order, yes. We even had our movers on the job. When a man stopped in to see me, he said his name was Clyde.
So, Mr. Collins, get this straight. If your company moves the Murphys, the Supreme Banner Society will boycott your business. And don't think we couldn't do it. Take a look at your membership here.
Thing like that could ruin us. We've been in business for years and have built up a good trade.
Read on, Mr. Grayson. There's more.
A small Negro firm called the Odell Van Company agreed to move the Murphy's furniture. But it was dusk before they completed the job, and the loaded van began its trip. This was at 5:30 on December 19th. At 5:45, Mrs. Murphy received a phone call.
Sergeant Walsh of the 22nd District Station, Mrs. Murphy. There's been an accident.
My husband. What happened? Did he...
No accident to any person, ma'am. The van moving your stuff was stopped by a gang of hoodlums at the corner of Dome and Vine, and, well, there ain't much left of your furniture. Now, if you come down...
You see, Mr. Grayson, all that is part of the record. But there's a conversation between Alan Murphy and Thomas Wright that isn't recorded. I'd like to tell you about this. It was at 5:50 that evening, just as Alan Murphy was preparing to leave his office.
Tom, my wife just phoned and said that some hoods stopped the van carrying our goods and hacked up all of our furniture. What do you think of a thing like that? Why would anybody do that to us?
Alan, don't you realize what must have been behind this act?
All I know is if I can get my hands on that bunch of...
Alan, listen to me. This was a protest against you for selling your house to me, a black man.
Huh? You mean they're trying to stop me from moving? Oh, I hardly think...
I understand these things better than you do.
Maybe you're right. I never thought of that angle.
I've made a mistake to buy your house, Alan. I see that now. I'll put it up for sale and find a good white
and
buyer.
And give up your one chance for decent living quarters? No.
But it isn't right that a fellow like you should suffer. Besides, this isn't your fight, Alan.
It's the fight of every citizen who wants to enjoy the rights of this free country. And no one is going to take away your right or mine to live where we please.
But this is aimed indirectly at me,
not at... I just don't like this sort of thing. Well, the next thing you know, maybe this guy will object to me as a neighbor because I'm of Irish descent or because I smoke a pipe.
But, Alan, don't you see
right
that it...
Right now, I only see one thing. That I'd better quit talking and get moving if I want to file a complaint.
Well, Alan Murphy filed his complaint with the police. The charge went down the blotter as malicious mischief committed by person or persons unknown. But no witnesses were found to the vandalism. It was at this point that the City Council for Human Rights was notified of the situation. We began our investigation, although there was little for us to go on. You see, we needed proof. I believe you know what happened next, Mr. Grayson. You were there.
Yes, it was on the night of December 20th. I had a headache and I'd retired early. It must have been about 8 o'clock when I was awakened by sounds of shouting outside. I went to the window, and as my eyes became accustomed to the scene, I could see a crowd of people standing on the sidewalk and in the street. All my friends and neighbors. The house next door was on fire. Smoke was pouring from the windows, and I could see the flames inside. I hurried into my clothes and went down into the street.
Hi, Grayson. Quite a fire.
How'd it start?
No one knows. You can't tell in a vacant house like that.
Then I noticed Clyde. He and two men, strange to me, were circulating through the crowd talking. As he moved nearer, I heard shouts here and there.
Let it burn!
That'll stop the Negroes.
There's the Negro fight.
Clyde was smiling as he approached me.
Hello, Grayson. I guess you feel the same as the rest of the members. We're agreed not to call the fire department. Might as well take advantage of an act of God, I say.
But it will endanger my property.
What insurance, haven't you? Later, if it gets that bad...
I'm certainly not going to stand here and watch this corner building burn with my house right next door. Flames spread. I'm phoning the fire department right now.
Of course, you know, Mr. Grayson, that the fire was stopped before it did much damage. But there are a couple of other things about the fire that you don't know. When the firemen arrived upon the scene, the back door of the house had been broken open. There were obvious signs that the fire was of an incendiary origin. This was substantiated by a can partially filled with gasoline, which was found in the basement. There were fingerprints on that can, Mr. Grayson, in which the police were interested.
Crime Laboratory?
Say, Jim, will you blow up those prints found on that gas can at 155 Dome Avenue?
Sure. Think you've got something?
Yeah. Don't think there's much doubt but that they're the prints of a commie been operating through the Midwest. Name of Clyde. We'll get him on this arson charge, but thought the FBI would like to know he cared about.
But I don't understand, Mr. Gibbs. This Clyde showed me a legal charter of this Supreme Banner Society.
Oh, yes, they had one. But it's since been revoked for violation of Section 471 of the Criminal Code, prohibiting the vilification of any group of citizens because of race.
Gosh, I didn't know.
You see, Mr. Grayson, this society was formed by a group of communists, mainly to agitate. This is a well-known tactic of theirs known as raising the issue. Other groups are working among the Negroes and other minority groups to create and foster unrest and dissension.
I'm sure that I or none of my neighbors realized the sort of thing we were getting into.
I'm sure you didn't, Mr. Grayson, but whenever you're urged by an outsider to show active protest against any American right, just think twice before you agree. Just remember the words of Lenin, who said, "The communist's task is to utilize every manifestation of discontent and to collect and utilize every grain of protest."
I'm glad you showed me this record, Mr. Gibbs. Is there anything I can do now to prove my Americanism?
Yes, you and the rest of your neighbors will have your chance, Mr. Grayson. If we apprehend the vandals who wrecked the Murphy's furniture, we may need some of you to assist in identifying them. In the meantime, Thomas Wright and his bride will be moving into their new home in a few days. Mr. Grayson, it's up to people like you to uphold their right as citizens to live where they please. The best proof of Americanism is to help forge this nation into a better likeness of the ideals upon which it was founded.
Aye, friends, it is up to you to uphold the rights of all people to live where they choose, under such circumstances as they may choose, freely. You know, there are many different people who profess different religions, who dress differently, who have different colors of skin. But these differences are slight, for in reality, men are the same. They want to live a good life with great peace of mind, to provide abundantly for their families, to be free to choose and accept opportunities in their own way. And most of all, they want to know and understand their fellow men, to accord them the same freedoms they desire, and to live together as good neighbors. How can you be recognized as a real American? Learn the true worth of your personal freedoms. Resist any group seeking to restrict your freedoms or those of any minority group. Aye, join the never-ending battle to forge this nation into a better likeness of the ideals upon which it was founded, with intelligent opposition to combat the forces which seek to destroy it. Make these your efforts and your contribution along the road to destination freedom.
Paul Revere, portrayed by Maurice Copeland, will return next Sunday to narrate another chapter in the story we call Destination Freedom. Presented by Station WMAQ in the interest of human freedom the world over. Today's script was written by Madeline Peters and produced under the direction of John Cowan. Carlton Cadell played Mr. Gibbs, with Jess Pugh as Mr. Grayson and Russ Reed as Thomas Wright. Other members of the cast were Jack Lester and Weslin Tilden. The special music was composed by Emil Soderstrom and was played by Helen Morton and Jose Bethencourt. Our engineer was George Wilson, sound effects by Cliff Mueller. This is Bill Grisky reminding you that the sound of the Freedom Bell is your invitation to follow Paul Revere along the road to Destination Freedom. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.